Those two verses are the first two verses of the Dhammapada, which are one of the most popular Buddhist texts. And those two verses sum up the essence of the Buddhist teaching and sum up the whole essence or reason for the Buddhist mind training. And the translation of that, for those who don't understand the Pali, is the mind is the forerunner of all conditions, or all actions are led by the mind. Mind is their master, mind is their maker. If one acts or speaks with a defiled state of mind, then suffering will follow, as the cartwheel follows the foot of the ox. And in the same way, if one or acts with a, speaks with a pure state of mind, then happiness will follow, as your shadow that follows you without departing. When the Buddha is teaching in the Dhamma that the mind is the most important thing there is in the universe, the most powerful thing there is, because essentially the mind creates the world. Those verses, the essence of those verses, are essentially that our experience of the world is created through our mind. And so if we have the wrong understanding of the world, we'll use the mind in the wrong way to produce suffering. If we have the right understanding of the world, we use this mind in the right way to experience peace and happiness. Now, it's true, it's a given that all beings are seeking for happiness. Even the smallest little insect is trying to live in comfort. Because if you, if an ant's crawling around and you put your finger down in front of it, what happens? It'll stop, it'll turn around, go the other way, because it senses danger. Senses danger, he wants to be free from danger, free from pain, and to live, to go on his way, to find happiness. So in the same way, all beings are searching to be happy and to avoid pain. But in the very searching for happiness, and this is the sad and ironic part of life, is that in that pursuit of happiness, people do in fact the very things that bring them suffering. And that's why the Buddha had the great compassion to spend 45 years of his life teaching Dhamma, because he saw that all these wonderful people, they're really trying to be happy, but out of wrong understanding, they're doing the exact very things that are digging their own graves. They're causing them misery. Because people are just simply blindly following their desire, blindly following their craving, following their conditioning, acting out of their compulsive impulses and their conditionings, acting out of hatred, jealousy, envy, pride, fear, and doing all kind of things that bring them misery, simply because they don't know any better. So that's why the Buddha had that great compassion, to try to point out the way. So it all boils down to changing our mind. Because happiness is inborn. Happiness is an innate part of existence. Happiness is our birthright, you might say. But people have ignored the very source of happiness, which is inside of them, and are trying to somehow wrench happiness out of things outside of themselves, to bring happiness inside, from outside, or they're depending on things for their happiness. So in the course of pursuing their happiness, they may kill and harm others, they may steal, cheat, deceive, they may abuse and exploit others sexually or otherwise, they may lie, slander, use vulgar, belittling speech, and all other sorts of speech, and all kinds of other negative actions. So, the essence of the Buddhist mind training is to change or transform the motivations or stimuluses behind our thoughts, and to develop wisdom into the nature of the mind, and to actually transform our mental process from one of habitual, unmindful and negative thought and action into a clear and mindful and wholesome way of acting and speaking. So, you know, changing, transforming the mind is the essence of the practice. But it's the difficult part. Where's the mind? Where's the mind to change and transform? You know, put your mind on my hand, I'll change it. Or take your mind out of your head, put it on your hand, and get a screwdriver and change it. Can you do that? Because the mind isn't something tangible. Like, we can change the body, right? You can go to the doctor, you can suck out some fat, lift off the wrinkles, transplant some hair, and all kinds of interesting things. Put in some plastic knees and hips, you see. But the mind is a little bit more difficult. And as many of you have noticed, not only this morning, but in your other meditations, the mind is not something easy to observe. Because how many people today, you know, try to just focus their mind on the breathing or remember that they were sitting, and then shortly afterwards were lost in thoughts? Or how many were stolen away this morning? How many minds were stolen? No, why? Why? Because you didn't see the thought coming, right? Ever so subtly, ever so evasively, the thoughts well up. We don't see them coming until they've already sort of like a cloud blowing in from the east, or where they come from, Canada, or the west or northwest, right? Like there's clouds blowing in over the northwest, or the fog. Before you know it, You know, you don't hardly see it coming, all of a sudden you're lost in it, surrounded by it. So the same way with our thoughts. That's because thoughts well up from the very source of the mind, you might say, from the deepest part inside of us. But where is our attention most of the time? Isn't it out there? So, you know, looking at your image of your face in the mirror in the morning, or looking at those delicious fried eggs that you're going to eat, or, you know, telling your children something, or looking at the sunset, looking at the trees, feeding your cat or dog. You see? So our attention is outside. And most people have what we call outsight. You've heard of insight, right? We're trying to develop insight because we have outsight. That means we're looking at things outside of us and getting all involved in them. So naturally, we don't see what is happening deep within. So there's a long distance, as it were, from our attention that's out here and the source of thought that's arising deep inside. You see, there's a long distance. So therefore, the thought's coming up here and it takes you a certain amount of time, and by the time your attention is there, the thought is already up on the surface and has engaged your whole nervous system. And then it's much easier to, much difficult to let go. So, what is the trick? What is the key for coming to the source of the mind? You have to bring the attention down to their level. You have to, you know, bring your attention down to their turf, as it were. You know, the mind's turf. Mara's turf, you know, ignorance, greed, hatred, and delusion, or laziness, or whatever sort of thoughts. We have to bring our attention inside and down to meet them at the level where they're still weak. Because when we can have our attention down where the thoughts are just arising, when they still have weak legs, as it were, then with just a shot of attention, with just the bare noticing of it, is enough to knock the power out of it. And it falls away very easily before it has engaged your nervous system and caused reactions already. It's like, you know, what an octopus is, right? Everybody know this eight-legged fish. So, you know, if you're swimming around and that fellow gets, you know, six or eight of his tentacles on you, then more or less you're finished. You know, you won't get him off. But if it only gets one or two on you, then perhaps, you know, with some effort you can pull them off. So the same way with our thoughts. The longer we let them carry us away, the more difficult it is then to shake them off, you know, especially our emotions like our anger or our irritability or our opinions or our daydreams or so many other sort of thoughts and emotions. But when you see them in their germinating stage, when they're just starting to sort of pop out of the unconscious, then they're very weak and just noticing them with mindfulness will cause them to just disappear. Or even if they start to come up a little bit more, like they get one tentacle on you or two, then you can apply whatever investigation of Dhamma or right understanding, clear comprehension, and or analyze that thought, feeling, emotion with just a little bit of analysis, it'll fall away. So how do we get our attention inside or develop insight? Well, that's what the Buddha's four foundations of mindfulness is addressing. The four foundations of mindfulness is the way for developing insight, going deeper and deeper inside through the body, feelings, vedana, citta, mind states, and dhamma, which are subtler mental phenomena, thoughts and emotions and other aspects. So, as most of you know, the anapanasati, or breath awareness, is usually the starting point for meditation. It's because breath serves as the connecting link. It serves as a bridge to go from the outside to the inside. We're drawing air in from the outside into their nostrils, into their lungs. That oxygen then goes to the blood, and the blood goes to all parts of the body, and then on the out breath the carbon dioxide, it's joined with the air in the lungs and is blown outside. You might say a continuous process of bringing the outside to the inside, and so on. So that serves as the perfect vehicle for coming to the body, for getting to the body. As I mentioned last night, we have to come home to the body. The body is the home for the mind. So we have to find the body, and then sort of go deeper inside. So that's why after the Anapanasati in the Mindfulness Sutta, and then the Buddha has you then pay attention to the four postures. And when one is sitting, you should know that you're sitting. When you're standing, know that you're standing. When you're walking, know that you're walking. When you're laying down, know that you're laying down. And then he even goes on to dissect the body into the 32 parts. That's sort of taking you deeper inside. In this body there is, the skin and bones and the teeth and nails and so on, going down to the all the internal organs and flesh and so on. So that's keeping your attention in the body. And then it goes even further than that into the four elements, even beyond the body parts, which are also concepts. You have the feeling of hardness, which is earth element. You have the feeling of fluidity, which is water element. You have the sensation of temperature or heat or cold, which is the heat element. And you have the sensation of motion, which is the air element. And when you feel the body, really you're feeling one of those kind of qualities of a solid feeling, a fluid feeling, a temperature feeling, a motion feeling. So, you know, all those kind of contemplations are keeping your attention inside the body, kind of going from, the outside, going progressively more inwards. And then, of course, there's also the movement part, the clear awareness of when you're bending and stretching and doing various things. You do that with the mindfulness. But then the next stage is what? After the body. So now you've gotten all the way through the body. You've gone from the surface, to the skin, which means, you know, the postures. Then you've gone inside, you feel the various organs, the elements. But when you're doing that, what are you really feeling? Which is the next foundation of mindfulness. What is that? No, feelings. Vedana. So feelings are often translated as sensation. But it's not only body sensation, it includes actually feelings mean pleasant, painful, and neutral sort of mental reactions based upon sensory stimulation. Like you feel something as being pleasurable or painful or neutral. But in body sensations, when you feel the body, when you keep your attention on the body, you start to feel all kinds of sensations. How many people could feel various sensations in the body this morning? Especially doing yoga exercise and so on, it helps to generate more dramatic sort of sensation activity. So sensations are even a sort of a deeper level than the gross feeling of the body. So now you're going even a step deeper inside in terms of awareness. That means your awareness is becoming subtler. If you can feel various sensations deep in the body, that means your attention is at a deeper level. Because normally you don't feel too many sensations when you're busy rushing around in the day, right? Until you stub your toe or bump into a wall. And then, you know, then it's a more painful feeling. So you train the attention to feel body sensations, and that's you're taking the attention now deeper inside. You're gaining deeper insight. And so you try to feel as many sensations as you can. The breathing is one. And as you're noticing the breathing going in and out, that breath is happening, inside, then you'll start to feel rippling effects of that. Or around the breathing, you'll start to feel different things. Other sorts of body sensations. You might hear your stomach gurgling, or you might feel a little rush of energy, or a little sting, or a muscle twitch, or itching sensations, or so many kinds of things. Flash of heat, or a chill. And you just start listening to that. You use the breathing as a kind of stabilizing device. And even within the breath, you can feel many, many sort of sensations. You feel the clothes touching the skin as your rib cage expands and contracts, your stomach expands and contracts. You can feel these many, points of touch on the skin. And as you keep your attention, you know, on that, so many things, sensations will arise. So you want that. That will hold your mind in sight. The more things you can notice, the more interesting it will be for the mind. You develop interest. The mind becomes interested because it's like, wow, a whole new toy box. Right? Like giving a child some toys. The mind, wow, look at this. You can feel your toes, you can feel your fingers, you can feel so many things on the head. And a lot of them are actually pleasant feelings. Some of them are painful, irritating, annoying, but even those can hold your attention. So therefore, while you're feeling the sensations, you don't have much time to think. Or if you do think, you'll be able to see the thought, because now your attention is about halfway down. Let's say that the source of thoughts is coming from somewhere here. Your mind used to be out here. Now you've brought it about halfway down when you're tending to the level of body sensation. So therefore, when the thoughts are rising, you see them in their weaker stage. You can see them with a sense of them kind of just being an object. It's kind of a bubble being released from the bottom of a pond. You can see this, like yourself starting to get angry. Or you can just see a thought from the past, and a thought about the future start to pop up. Maybe not see that, actually see it, but you sense it. And therefore, when you observe it and you be mindful of it and you acknowledge what it is, then it, 9 times out of 10, it just disintegrates. Because that is the power, what is called the power of mindfulness. When you're mindful of something, it's like mindfulness is like a beam of light. And it exposes that object or feeling for what it is, sort of like a laser beam disintegrating that thing. Because normally, you see, Mara the coward, you all know what Mara is? All you Sri Lankans must know what Mara is. Mara is, you know, the small ego inside of us, you know, and ignorance, and all the negative states of mind, and are what they call, in quotes, the little self, you might say. The self with its attachments and identities, and wants to preserve its the status quo, and wants to, you know, just do what it wants to do. But he's kind of a coward. So he's always, or she is kind of hanging out, you know, looking for the first chance to steal our attention. So therefore, when you expose it, when you expose Mara, when you expose the thought to mindfulness, it shakes and trembles and then disappears. Because you read that in the sutras. I'm sure, when you're Sri Lankan people, you read the sutras, right? Many sutras in which the Buddha said, ah, I see you, Mara, and he split. Right? Remember that? So it's the same way. It's simply that mindfulness exposes whatever mischievous thoughts or negative thoughts or downright malicious thoughts, or exposes them in the germinating stage, and they disintegrate. and that leaves our mind free. So mindfulness is sort of, you know, there's a little sort of story. Let's say you're sitting on your couch or your sofa watching the telly, and you're engrossed in, you know, Oprah Winfrey or some soap opera or something. Or you're watching a football game and rooting for the, you know, this is your favorite team. And, you know, you have that outside. And you're all distracted. And then a car pulls up in front of your house, but you don't hear it because your mind is distracted. And then the car door slams. You don't hear that. The dog starts barking. But you don't hear that. Then, you know, you hear footsteps walking up toward the house. You don't hear that. And you hear somebody playing with the window. I'm not trying to open the window. You don't hear that. Or you don't hear the window opening. Or the person climbing through the window and tiptoeing through your dining room, across the living room, behind where you're sitting. And then they put a bag over your head to tie you up. Rob the house. And then split. So when we have unmindfulness, when we're not aware of our feelings and emotions, we're not grounded in our body, that's what happens with marathas. It'll steal our attention away and leave us exhausted, run us around, run us ragged. That means with our worrying and our all kinds of negative thoughts and our chewing up the past and developing ill will and all kinds of negative thoughts. So we do that without really being mindful of what we're doing. Mara just leads us around for minutes and minutes and minutes or even hours, getting all kind of lost and all kind of you know, worrisome anxiety thoughts, negative thoughts. Causes us to do a lot of stupid things. Nahimna. Anyway, so we didn't see the hora. Hora avila, the kanya. That's my limited. Seemingly. So now, let's say you're sitting on the same sofa, but and the TV is still on, and you might be sort of watching it, but still you're grounded in yourself. Part of your attention might be watching the TV show, but still you're aware, you're feeling the body sitting in the sofa, and your attention is sort of floating, it's not fixed on one thing. So that when you hear the car coming up, oh, you say, oh yeah. The car is pulling up outside. Well, the neighbors are having a party later tonight, perhaps. It's for them. But then they stop in front of your house and say, oh, maybe my friend is coming over. Then the dog starts barking. That dog never barks at my friend. Yeah. Then they start walking toward the back door. Then you get alarmed. Friend never comes to the back door. And so you're on guard. You know. And then you hear him playing at the window. Then you realize probably what is happening. So you start getting up. You start going around to the back door, a window. And you're just standing behind the window and you're seeing the window lift up. And you see this chap, let's say maybe it's a lady. You have to be fair for these days. Cat burglar. And so they get into the window, and then you're standing there with a gunny bag, and you put that over the head and tie him up and call the police, and they take him to jail. No, but that is sort of what happens when you you develop mindfulness. That you can see these sort of thief thoughts are unfounded worry and fears and anxieties and all these things that we buy into, and then we get carried away, lost in them. You see them when they're just beginning and exposed. Ah, this is anxiety. This is anger. This is fear. These are just empty bubbles. I don't have to get lost in them. And so they go away by themselves. And so you can be free from them. So, that's the power of mindfulness. But you have to have that attention deeply grounded inside. And that's why the importance of the attention to the body. See, because the body is something we can notice, we can sort of, the body is something we can control to a certain extent. We can't really control it, but we can kind of manage it to a certain extent, or at least we can feel it. We can tell it what to do, more or less. But the mind is, we're not able to do that for the most part, because it's an invisible thing. We don't even know where it comes from. So we use the body as a stepping stone to reach the mind. But in the discourse on the mindfulness of the body, the Buddha said that even practicing mindfulness of the body can lead to full enlightenment. But anyway, the body, we use that as the stepping stone to reach the mind, or especially the feelings. So by keeping your attention on the body, you come in touch with the feelings. And as you tend to body sensation, as you keep the mind in body sensation, and you can feel subtler and subtler and subtler body sensation. It's incredible how many subtle body sensations you can notice. And then you'll hear sounds going in the background, and sounds also produce sensations in the body sometimes, but moreover they produce perceptions. Is also one of the first forms of thought. What is a perception? It's the way the mind identifies certain sensory or all sensory stimulations. Let's say, you're sitting there, and then you have a pain down here, and then the thought of your knee comes into the mind. That is a perception. Knee is a perception. That means that's the first emergence of thought. It's the way the mind identifies sensory vibrations. Because if your eyes are closed, you don't see a knee, you don't feel a knee, right? All you're doing is feeling of a a vibration, a sensation, isn't it? One of those four elemental sensations. Either it's heat, it's a feeling of solidity, or it's heat, it's moving. But it has a certain vibration, and the mind creates the thought of a need because of our language, because of where we're brought up and everything. We've learned to identify these things, and as our brain developed and our language developed, we started giving thoughts and labels and mental pictures to sensations. And that's the only way we remember things. And this is a way that you can actually apply it in your meditation as you're doing the body awareness, contemplation of the body. You know, if you put your mind on any body part and just feel it, feel the sensation of it, then you will see the thought identifying that body part pop into the mind. If your mind is calm and concentrated enough. Just like a toast popping up from a toaster. Mm-hmm. Or it's probably even more dramatic for sounds. You know, you hear different sounds and the mind just identifies them, you know, immediately. First there's the sound, and then these you know, mental labels, sometimes pictures, pop into the mind, isn't it? So when you're able to see those clearly, that's even a deeper level of attention, a deeper level of awareness than even feeling. And that is the aggregate of sanya, or perception. Most of you are probably aware of the Panchaskanda, right? Panchupadana Kanda. Or your Abhidhammas. It means, you know, body, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. Rupa Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana. So Sanya is the those mental pictures and labels that pop up from the mind. And you know, you can train the mind to see those. And then immediately following those mental pictures and identifications, the past history of those objects arises. That means fear associated with that perception, memories associated with that perception, desires, cravings. Then you think about them, it triggers off thoughts about them, and then you make some decision on what to do about it. All of that kind of rises just real fast. But you can see that very fairly plainly if you're deeply grounded and have awareness. You know, if you're grounded in the body sensation. And so those are where the thoughts arise, and when you see them, you'll be able to have a greater detachment to them, because you see them in their impermanence and conditioned nature, and how you're not really wanting to do those things. It all happens by itself, and you can see how these are just sort of have been programmed into us since we were a child. And especially with likes and dislikes, uh, All of these sense objects, sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, and body sensations, and these perceptions, when you perceive something, it's perceived as being something you like or you don't like, or a neutral. But the ones that affect us most are the things that we like or dislike, right? The things that we like, we try to hold on to, or we try to search out. The things that we dislike, we try to push away, and get away from, struggle against. And then we create the karma for or against those objects. Out of greed or desire, we create karma to hold on to or get things that we don't have, and try to push away, get away from, reject things that come to us. And most of our life is caught up in that tug of war, that push or pull. But we don't really see it clearly because we're too caught up into it. We're too much identified with the process and clinging too much to our opinions and our feelings. And the greed and the aversion is so strong in us that we don't really clearly see what is happening. And so we remain caught in the cycle. Keep producing karma over and over. So the key to transformation is learning to see the impulse, because karma is created by the conscious decision to do something. So it's created at the stage of sankhara, or volition. Just feelings or perceptions don't create karma. So when you have a pleasurable feeling or a painful feeling, and you perceive it as being, that's an ant crawling on my face, that's a pain in my knee, or that's a delicious item of food. You see, these are actually the results of past karma, but they don't have any power on their own. But then you have to take a decision: what am I going to do about this thing? Am I going to go out and shoplift that chocolate cake because I don't have the money for it, but I desire it? Or am I going to kill that ant or mosquito on the face? Or am I going to shift my posture to relieve the pain in my leg? You see, there comes a decision. After you've thought about it, now you've got to do something about it. You've either got to leave it alone, or you've got to take some action. That all depends on you. That all depends on your right understanding. But now you've got to make the decision. You can either create the karma or you cannot. That's where you have to apply the right effort. You can follow that or abandon it. And that is where you transform the mind. That's where mental transformation takes place. That's where purification of the karma takes place. That's where the practice of the Dhamma takes place. So that's why in the mindfulness practice, the emphasis is on establishing and cultivating mindfulness, and especially doing it in that systematic fashion, because the Buddha taught the four foundations of mindfulness,
in that order for a reason. He started with the body for a reason. And he followed that with feelings for a reason. And he followed that with the mind states for a reason. Because it's the natural order of progression in the journey of insight, of the journey inside. Because the body is the outer shell, the sensations are the next inner shell, the mind states are the next subtlest inner shell, and then the subtle dhammas are the deepest. Or even consciousness itself is arising from. That's why we need to develop a good foundation in the body. And that's also because that's the closest thing to us. That's the easiest thing to access. And so also our bodily movements. Because again, the intention is where the karma is created. So when you lift the arm, is this arm going to lift by itself? Well, there has to be a reason to lift it, right? So there's an itch on my ear. So that's irritable. I mean, there isn't now, but I'm imagining it for your sake. So that's irritable. I want to get rid of it. So there's a decision. Should I get rid of it or not? If I just see it and I apply wisdom and say, well, that itch is only going to last a few seconds. If I just leave it alone, it's going to disappear and I don't have to waste any energy. But if you can't stand it, if you can't wait 2 seconds, then you may itch it and your fingernail may scratch your ear and even make it worse, make another pain there. Or you'll have wasted some energy. And then it'll disappear anyway. Or you hear a sound. Trying to meditate and you hear some dogs barking or some people talking outside. And if you wait a few moments or a few minutes, they'll stop and it'll disappear. But if you can't wait, you say, no, they should shut up, they should stop. And you start getting irritated about it. Even to the point where you might get up and go to the window and shout at them to shut up. Or throw some stones at the dog. You see, then you've created karma. Because you couldn't wait a few minutes. So, mindfulness practice is conservation of energy. We're conserving our energy. Because we waste it so much. We waste it in useless reactions to things. Such as always want, scratch this and rub this and, you're constantly doing those sort of things all day. Or you hear sounds, what's that? Like one of these string puppets, getting jerked around like this. It may sound funny, but actually it's true when you stop to look at it. It's called nervous system jerks. Is it the question regarding that? Yeah.
What you're saving all this energy for?
For concentration. When you're not being distracted by all these, and 90% of them are useless things, you conserve your energy and you build up a powerful mind. You build up a powerful concentration. And that concentration is then able to go deeper and deeper and deeper inside to develop even deeper and deeper levels of attention, insight, and wisdom. It's like a magnifying glass. If you're trying to burn a piece of paper, you know, with the sun shining through the magnifying glass, right? But if your hand is shaking, are you going to be able to build up enough heat to burn the paper? You all did that experiment when you were in school, I'm sure, right? So you have to hold it steady in order for the heat to build up. So if we're constantly dissipating our energy through these nervous system jerks and so on, the mind is not going to get concentrated enough to build up the power to go to the next deeper level, to go to the first jhana, to go to the second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, or go to the deeper states of vipassana, jnana. So that is why we want to conserve our energy. Or even for more practical, mundane purposes, if you're studying for your exams, or you're doing anything in your work, you're a dentist concentrating on drilling somebody's tooth, or a surgeon operating. What's going to happen if you start keep going like this, or letting the thoughts about your broken relationship or any other kind of worries come into your mind? Might kill somebody. So even in mundane things, the ability to concentrate and not be distracted has its payoffs, has its benefits, even more so in meditation. So it all depends on the ability to see these distractions before they've actually triggered off your motor response system. And that's exactly what the function of mindfulness does. That's the function of mindfulness, to delay or short circuit the reaction process by simply observing that stimulation from this deeper state of attention and giving you a few split seconds to reflect on that object to see if it's really necessary to react or not. See, that's the crucial thing. It gives us just a few split microseconds of extra time to think, now do I really need to scratch my ear? Do I really need to worry about these dogs barking over there? Do I really need to worry about this person who is coughing over here next to me, get disturbed by that? You see, normally we don't have that extra time. We don't have that detachment. And so we just get lost into various reactions, unwholesome thoughts, get lost into daydreams and so on. So the function of mindfulness is to be aware of the distraction as a distraction, apply whatever right thought, whatever investigation of Dhamma, whatever clear comprehension to it, like pulling the one or two of the tentacles of the octopus off you, and then you're able to remain centered inside and therefore go deeper to the next level. But if you pull it out, then you've got to bring the mind all the way back in again to go deeper. So that's why mindfulness is, one of the most important mental qualities of all the Dhammas. And that's why we emphasize cultivating the attention to the body and attention to body sensations. Because it gets you into that closer contact with feelings and perceptions, which are the things that are triggering off thoughts.
Yes. Question now.
Is it about this? Otherwise,
I just want to review what you've said, in that if you are having a feeling of a craving, karma is only created when you actually go to the object which you're craving. Is that correct? Is that past the perception level?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you can stay with, hold attention, knowing, but not reaching for the history.
The history might even also come in, but if you can just let that go, then...
Okay. So you might even be aware of the history of that perception.
Yeah.
But if you don't reach, if you don't move, then...
But the more you contemplate on the history, the more tempted you might be to give in to the object.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah,
so the level of urging, it's what I call the level of urging. You have to bring your attention to the level of urging. And that is also easiest done in the body, because you're meditating, you got a pain, and you can see this urge to want to shift your knee. You can see this urge to want to, do this or do something. Even the urge to blink, the urge to swallow. And you're just sitting there still and enduring and being aware of these discomfort sensations arising, the urge will be right there with it or come next. So you just watch that. Make that the object of your attention. Forget your breathing, forget all these other things. The breathing is only to get you into the body, to get you in touch with sensations. Sensations are only to get you in touch with the urges. The urges are where the karma is going to be either created or nullified. If you give in to the urge, you create the karma. If you let the urge dissipate and disintegrate, you're not creating the karma. So therefore, that's why in meditation, when you, the mindfulness of the body is to, when especially these painful feelings and pleasant feelings, that's where the urge arises. You see the urge to, try to get away from these, discomfort feelings, the urge to scratch or itch something, or even the urge to get up. Pain's arising. What happens if you're at home? Pain, then you're going to sit for 30 minutes and then Mara comes along and says, well, I forgot to feed the cat. Maybe I should feed the cat now. So if you're not aware of that, you'll think, yes, that's true. The poor cat, he's starving, here I'm meditating, I'm selfish. And you see, that's Mara. And so you might get up out of your meditation thinking you're doing out of compassion for the cat, but you're doing it because you don't like that pain. Because you want to get away from the pain. But that is how Mara fools us. Even though it might be, sure, a compassionate thing to feed your cat, but can it wait 20 minutes? Cats can wait a long time. You ever seen them waiting for a mouse? So that's how we have to to use our attention in mindfulness. And to see the little tricks and games that Mara is trying to play in order for us to waste our energy. You know, like you might be a thought come in about something at work or some vacation you're having. And so you think, oh, and now's a good time to plan that. Or you start worrying about that. You justify, you know, yourself for doing that. But again, that's Mara. Those things can wait. So we have to see that. And we have to apply the right effort first we have to apply the right understanding, but I'll talk about that probably later. Anyway, I wanted to kind of explain that aspect of Dhamma and that aspect of meditation practice, because really that is the heart essence of the mindfulness practice and the reason for the practice. And one, it's very useful to have that right understanding. That's part of right understanding. That you understand what our body and mind process is made of in its different subtle little tricks. And then you have to develop the alertness to observe those tricks and to conserve one's energy and to transform negative actions or abandon negative actions and develop deeper and deeper equanimity and tranquility and mindfulness. But it's sure, some things we do have to take action on. And there's some things, like even some body pains, if you just ignore it and, you know, macho, grit your teeth and sit through it. People have, you know, could really damage their knees before. I've seen it. Or other parts of the body. But these are not so common. Maybe one out of 100 or 1,000 sensations would be what you might call life-threatening or crippling. Because again, Mara will play its games. It will think something is severe, but just because he wants to get away from that, but not because it's anything actual, critical, or life-threatening. But to come to the understanding of what is and what isn't necessary, it takes some skill. You know, it takes a lot of time and seeing how your own mind works and how these things come up in repetitive patterns over and over and over and over again. Because most of them do. Most of them are just old repetitive records playing over and over and over again in your mind. And we have to learn how to identify them if we want to go deeper and break through some of these sort of patterns. So I think that may be enough for your reflection and give you something to contemplate perhaps in the rest of the day. And I've already seen that there's already quite a bit of questions in that box. even without the Dhamma talk, but I may not be able to get all those tonight. But so now let's have a period of standing and walking just to relieve probably the pain building up in your legs and so on, and then we'll start the interview period shortly for those who've signed up for interviews, and then for the rest of you who are not having interviews, or when you finish your interview or before your interview time comes, simply try to continue the practice And especially if you're doing walking meditation, try to pay a little bit extra attention to see if, to notice the intention before your movements. Even in walking meditation, to lift your foot off the ground, there has to be an intention. There has to be the impulse to lift. And so you can sort of force it up by waiting to lift until you see it. Or sense that impulse to lift and to swing forward and to lower down and to shift the body weight forward. But you have to do them very slowly to see that. When you move quickly, there's no way you're going to see the intentions to all those movements. That's why the slow motion movement method was designed for a specific purpose. Not just to move slow, but in order for you to enable you to see the intentions, the level of intention preceding the movements. And the thoughts that are also coming out based on that. So, if you want to stretch your legs out, do the forward stretch to help relieve some pain. Learn how to pause between the various postures and movements. In other words, like coming up out of that stretch before immediately starting to stand up, you know, as soon as you're stretched up, to pause for a second. You know, it has to be a microsecond, because then you can see the intention to do your next thing. You know, the intention, okay, now I have to draw this leg up, draw that leg up. And you can see the intention to draw the other leg up, and you draw the other leg up. And you can see the intention to put your hands on the ground to brace yourself. The intention to lean forward to push the body into the squatting position. The intention to bring your hands forward and place them on the ground to brace yourself for standing up. Like that. If you can do everything in that step-by-step manner, that's the quickest and most powerful method for tuning the mind in to that level of intention. And then you're the source of thoughts, that you can see other sort of thoughts. And then the intention to push up. Attention, standing, breathing. Simply keep the attention focused on that fact of standing and breathing, and naturally start to feel various sensations connected with it. And just notice them as they come and go, change. Thank you.
good way to train the attention on sensations, the feel, touch of clothes on the skin of the blossom door. You're observing the body, standing, breathing, sensations. Be alert for any urges to want to move. Be aware of the irritable sensations, the urge to want to remove them.